Oh, it's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and you know what that used to mean? Crappy football, but not this year. More on that later. Before we get to Thursday football, we got to talk about Sunday football. Washington heading to Indianapolis, what we thought was going to be the first ever regular season showdown between RG3 and Andrew Luck. It's not going to happen because in probably one of the worst kept secrets in hindsight in NFL history, RG3 has been benched by coach Jay Gruden. We've seen this coming. We've heard it coming. Gruden has talked about his starting quarterback unlike any coach that I can recall talking about his starting quarterback in recent memory. Gruden has been killing Griffin publicly, so it's no surprise that even though Gruden said we have every intent to start RG3, well, every intent to do it, ultimately it's Colt McCoy who'll get the start in Indianapolis, not RG3. And the real question here, what's the future for RG3? What's the future for Jay Gruden? Is the front office behind Jay Gruden here? Is ownership behind Jay Gruden? When this happened last year, Mike Shanahan, the former head coach, benching RG3, we knew that the die had already been cast. It was a fait accompli. RG3 would be back. Shanahan would be gone. What do we really know now? Bruce Allen, where's he in all this? The GM and president. Is he accountable for the failed decision to give up three first-round picks and a second-round pick to get RG3? Is Bruce Allen in hot water? Will his last name save him from what arguably should be a termination of his employment with the team based upon the performance of the franchise in recent years? What have they really done? Unlikely playoff appearance in 2012 after starting 3-6, even with RG3 playing very well, they were still 3-6. They had to win 7 in a row to get to the postseason. What does Allen think? What does owner Daniel Snyder think? Has Snyder decided that he no longer has that strong affection and admiration and investment in RG3? Next year, $3.2 million, fully guaranteed to keep Griffin around. Will he even be there? And Adam Schefter's report that Griffin's being benched, but he's still a big part of the team's future, that just feels like a clumsy effort to try to salvage trade value, doesn't it? Are they going to try to trade RG3? Better to trade him than cut him, because if cut him, you probably still have to pay him because he probably doesn't have offset language in his contract, and then he can go right up the road to Philadelphia, and Chip Kelly can turn him into something that Jay Gruden wasn't able to turn him into, and that's the other issue here. How much of this is RG3 is no longer suited to be the starting quarterback versus Jay Gruden isn't able to take his system and adapt it to fit RG3's strengths and minimize his weaknesses? I'd like to think there's some coach out there that could still get the most out of RG3, even if he is less inclined and less able to run it dynamically like he used to. This just feels like Gruden came through the door knowing he couldn't bench RG3, knowing that it couldn't even be an open competition in training camp, but also realizing at some point the opportunity would arise to put RG3 on the bench. It did, it has, and now he's benched. And there's a lot more to this story that's going to play out. What's RG3 going to say? What is Dan Snyder going to say? What's Bruce Allen going to say? And more importantly, who's going to be back with this team? Who's going to be employed by this team as of the Monday after the regular season ends with another failure to make it to the postseason? Speaking of failures to make it to the postseason, we give you the New York Jets, who seem to be competing with Washington to see which team is more dysfunctional, because every time Washington takes the lead, here come the Jets. And the story from Manish Mehta, we're going to talk about this with Manish later today, the idea that Manish, while interviewing Coach Rex Ryan during the bye week and asking Ryan about a trip to Kentucky to visit Buddy Ryan, the legendary former defensive coordinator of the 85 Bears, coach of the Eagles, coach of the Cardinals, Buddy Ryan's been battling cancer, Rex Ryan willing to talk about it, somebody from media relations slams the door on it. Bizarre, to say the least. And it all comes at a time when it's regarded as a done deal that Rex Ryan won't be back. Will they win enough games to save John Idzik? At this point, does Rex Ryan have any motivation to try to save John Idzik? You're playing for pride at this point. At some point, does a desire to see Idzik go down with the ship overcome the pride that would come from winning a couple of games down the stretch? Because if they finish 2-14 or 3-13, I think Idzik is gone. He may already be gone. The Jets are gone. The Jets are done. And they'll nevertheless continue to provide us ample fodder for entertainment as they finish out a string that continues in prime time. Monday night, visit from the Dolphins. Two games against the Dolphins, who are currently above 500, and also a visit from the Patriots. Looks like 4-12 is the best case scenario, and I'm not willing to assume that the Jets will win at Minnesota or at Tennessee. I think the Jets split those games. I think the Jets have one more win. I think the Jets finish 3-13, which means Idzik likely is finished. The Seahawks aren't finished complaining about the NFL's apparent vendetta against Marshawn Lynch. Look, we explained this last week. The media policy is simple. It doesn't require much. You can say we're on to Cincinnati over and over again. You can say we're focused on Washington. You can say I'm just trying to be a good teammate. You just have to say something. Marshawn Lynch repeatedly said, yeah, on Sunday when he met with the media. Whether the NFL continues to take action against him remains to be seen. But teammate Richard Sherman decided to offer up some sort of commentary that maybe was supposed to be funny. Maybe some thought it was funny. Here's a little snippet of what Richard Sherman had to say yesterday.
You know, the other day, Marshawn Lynch got fined $100,000. Did you know that? $100,000. And it's like, they wouldn't even pay him $100,000 if he had talked. If he had spoken. Doug, do you think they would have paid him
$100,000? No, they sure wouldn't have.
Jeez Louise. But you know who does pay me a lot of money? Beats by Dre, the wonderful headphones that I wear.
I like those headphones.
They, but the league doesn't let me say anything about them. Doug, why is that?
I don't know. Sounds kind of hypocritical to me.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit hypocritical. It seems like we're in a league where they say, players, you know, you don't endorse any alcohol. Please don't endorse alcohol. No DUIs, please. But yet, a beer sponsor is their biggest sponsor. Doug, how do you feel about that?
Like I said, sounds very hypocritical.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's very, very interesting.
If you are going to do that, it's important to have a microphone down with the guy who's hiding under the podium. That's where Doug Baldwin was. I still don't know what the point of the whole cardboard cutout was, because Baldwin was there. It just the whole thing, and maybe it sounded like a good idea when they were riffing about it in the locker room. And yeah, then we can say this, and then we'll say that. It's going to be great. I don't know that I would call it great. I don't know that Richard Sherman's ever going to be invited to host Saturday Night Live, and if he ever has been invited, they need to watch that and maybe rescind the invitation, because it really, I don't know what the point was. No, Marshawn Lynch wouldn't have been paid $100,000 if he had spoken, but part of what pays him, I don't know, $7 million a year was the fact that being an NFL player means being available to the media, because the media coverage helps generate fan interest, and fan interest helps generate dollars. I mean, if people didn't care about the NFL, they wouldn't watch it on TV. It wouldn't be worth so many billions per year on TV. It all kind of ties together. And for a guy who went to Stanford, you would think he would understand the nuances at play here. Now, maybe his audience is the locker room. Maybe his audience is Marshawn Lynch. But it's not hypocritical to find a guy who fails to comply with a fairly simple policy that is easy to comply with. You show up, you answer some questions, and you go home. That's all the league asks for, and that's been a big part of the NFL's growth over the years, having players available to the media. Every Sunday night in Football Night in America, what do we show? We show clips of guys talking to the media after the game, whether it's the coach, the quarterback, whoever the big storyline came from. That helps tell the story. The NFL knows it. Most players get it. Most players realize they profit from it. Every once in a while, you have a guy who doesn't. Every once in a while, you have a great Thanksgiving slate of football. It used to be we were the captive audience, the old George Costanza, why am I watching the show about nothing because it's on TV? Well, now you can't just have the football game on in the background. The NFL has given us games this year, and there's been a recent push toward giving us great games on Thanksgiving. Nationally televised games. The NFL realizes, you know what? We're going to watch it even if it's a bad game. But a lot more people are going to watch it if it's a great game. All three games broadcast, Fox, CBS, and NBC, all three great games. Seven teams vying for five open spots in the NFC, because we know one of the spots is going to go to the NFC South champion, whoever that is, however bad they may be. But the seven teams vying for the other five of those teams play. We're going to learn a lot about the Lions. Can they deal with adversity? Can they come back? Can they score a touchdown? We're going to learn about whether or not the Eagles are really part of the NFL's elite. They've got Cowboys, Seahawks, Cowboys over the next 3 weeks. And then 49ers, Seahawks. You know, the last time these two teams met, it was an elimination game in the playoffs. It feels like an elimination game now. The loser could very well be done, especially if the 49ers lose at home to the Seahawks, because the 49ers still have to go to Seattle. So three great games tomorrow. Looking forward to every one of those games that get started. It's like 12:30 p.m. Eastern time, I believe. Either way, it's a full day of football, and we hope you'll spend it watching football, especially the final game that's on NBC. When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking to Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News about this bizarre report on Rex Ryan and Rex Ryan's future and John Idzik and everything else related to the Jets. And then it's pick time. 16 games this weekend. MDS and I disagree only on one. We'll break that one down, plus a couple of others to wrap the show. Before that, Manish Mehta. Before that, we take a break. We are back. This is PFT Live. The New York Jets looked pretty good before the bye week. After the bye week, not so good. That upset of the Steelers was followed by a blowout loss to the Bills in Detroit. The Jets had the advantage there because they actually were able to have a full week of practice. Maybe they shouldn't have practiced. Maybe they'd been better off if they didn't practice. Trying to figure out how this organization is going to get better off in the future. And to help us with that, Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News. And Manish, let's start with the quarterback decision. It looked like it was going to be Mike Vick. Now it's going to be Geno Smith. How did that come to be?
Well, look, my understanding is that Rex Ryan preferred Mike Vick, and that would make sense because Mike Vick clearly gives the Jets the best opportunity to win some of these final five games. And when Rex Ryan is looking for another job after the season, I'm sure he doesn't want to have a 2-14 season on his resume. But look, ultimately, Rex Ryan isn't making any of the major decisions at this point. I think he has resigned to the fact that he'll be looking for an appointment after the season. So, there's other people above him that ultimately have the final say on big matters. And clearly, even at 2-9, who's the starting quarterback, is a pretty significant move.
What do you think Rex is going to do next year? Because I think we're all in agreement. He's playing out the string. He's done. I don't see him becoming a head coach possibly ever again. Defensive coordinator, presumably. Or does he get into broadcasting? What do you think he does?
Well, a couple years ago, I was told that he was intrigued by the idea. And I think there actually may have been an opportunity for him to get into TV, and that was the year before they fired, or the season, I should say, that they ended up firing Tony Sperano, and he wanted to make some changes on offense, and clearly Woody Johnson gave him that opportunity. But look, I think he's going to be able to get a defensive coordinator job fairly quickly. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody in the league. Whether he gets another head coaching opportunity, Mike, I wouldn't be surprised if there would be a chance for him somewhere. Now, obviously, it depends on how many openings there are, what the openings are, how many available candidates in the pool are available. But I wouldn't rule out him becoming a head coach next year.
But, I recall before he became a head coach the first time around, there was a thought in league circles that Buddy Ryan's kids would not be able to become head coaches because the concern was they'd be too much like Buddy Ryan. And there were times where Rex Ryan was even more bombastic than Buddy Ryan. Do you think the way Rex has been over the years, with the profanity, the fines, the giving the middle finger, the endless guarantees that kind of were pervasive throughout the early years of his time with the Jets, do you think that works against him in getting another head coaching job?
Well, in some organizations, yeah, absolutely. For example, I don't think the Giants would ever hire Rex Ryan. That's just not how they do business. But there are owners out there that want to make a splash and want a dynamic face of the franchise, face of the organization, and that's clearly what Rex Ryan was or is actually for now for Woody Johnson. So it really depends on the situation. What is the owner looking for? What are the dynamics of that particular organization at this time? Do they need a strong voice, a guy who clearly can coach defensively, at least? Yeah, there's a lot of factors at play. So does, the way he's carried himself through the years work against him? I would say yes, depending on what organization it is, but I also think that it can work in his favor as well.
What's the deal with the interview with Rex Ryan, and the question came up about Buddy's health and Rex going to see him during the bye week, and then someone slams the door on your ability to ask that question?
Yeah, I mean, that's disappointing. Rex Ryan visited Buddy in Kentucky over the bye week, and it has been documented by many people. Buddy is not in the greatest of health at this point, and clearly Buddy has a great relationship with Rex, and Rex told me flat out that, he was willing to talk about the weekend. I think he spent the weekend down in Kentucky. But the organization told me through a media relations representative that he wasn't going to be available to talk. And this was, in Rex Ryan's presence. It was an awkward scene, to say the least. And clearly, I've been pretty critical of the general manager, John Idzik, and the organization, isn't particularly pleased with that. So, Rex was not made available. So I think it's unfortunate. It's disappointing that they would choose to take that route. But Rex was more than willing to talk to me about it.
I want to make sure I understand how this went down. Were you interviewing Rex separately on other issues, and you wanted to ask about Buddy, and it was intercepted by the media relations person during the interview, or did they just not make him available at all?
No, I pulled Rex aside after his press conference specifically to talk about this, and the media relations department was fully aware. I had requested Rex a couple days earlier, and so they knew what I wanted to talk to Rex about, and it was in private with Rex and me and the media relations official there.
Who do you believe gave the order to prevent Rex from talking about that?
Well, my opinion is clearly it's the general manager. Now, you know, the organization, again, told me that they weren't going to tell me why or who sent down a directive, but it was clearly not Rex Ryan because he was willing to share that information with me.
You've gone all in against GM John Idzik. The disclosure about the move that was made by the media relations person to keep you from asking Rex about Buddy, that was part of a broader column that really is an all-out attack on John Idzik. What's your biggest problem with Idzik as the GM of the team?
Well, first and foremost, he's done a terrible job making football decisions, and that's really what it comes down to. I mean, personalities aside, general managers are paid to draft good players. They're paid to sign good players in free agency, and I think if you look at John Idzik's body of work over the first 2 years, he's done a poor job in that. He has had 19 draft picks, Mike, in two drafts. He has had one impact player, and that was Sheldon Richardson. And the only reason he was in a position to draft Sheldon Richardson was because he traded away one of the best players in the history of the franchise, Darrell Revis. So you have to keep that in mind as well. And in free agency, his biggest move this offseason has been Eric Decker, who's been a solid pro, without a doubt a solid pro, not a game breaker by any stretch of the imagination. So when you look at his body of work and you factor in that they left $20 million on the table after this team came off an 8-win season, and in pretty much every organization in America, if you're coming off an 8-win season, you have designs of making the playoffs the following season. And if you're not helping out your head coach by giving him the players that he needs in his scheme to make a playoff push, then I don't think you're doing a good job. And I think when you look at it a little bit deeper, there are some ancillary issues that the general manager has been preoccupied with. And it's really been a running joke, to be perfectly honest with you, within the organization. The idea of, I had one prominent member in the organization tell me that Idzik was on a quote-unquote witch hunt to find out what people in the organization were making critical remarks about him to the media. There's a pervasive paranoia throughout the organization that did not exist before John Idzik came. Because if you remember, Mike, this is a team that was on Hard Knocks, a team in which Woody Johnson was proud to say was a transparent organization. And, that really isn't the case right now. And there are a lot of people in that building who have been tight-lipped for the most part because they are, for lack of a better word, afraid of the general manager. And, again, this is not a general manager with any kind of track record. It's not a person with any kind of personnel expertise. He was a member of the Seattle Seahawks. He was not a member of the Seattle Seahawks decision-making team that drafted and brought in guys at free agency. He signed contracts to players that John Schneider and Pete Carroll wanted, and that's the reality of it.
And in Idzik's defense, he hasn't had a chance to hire a head coach. He was stuck with Rex Ryan, whether he wanted him or not, and presumably he didn't want him because every GM has an idea of who he'd like to hire coming in the door. Shouldn't he get a chance to hire a head coach before we pronounce a final verdict on John Idzik?
Well, it's a fair point that general managers typically should hire their own head coach, and that really goes back to Woody Johnson. If you're going to point the finger about this relationship between John Idzik and Rex Ryan, ultimately the owner is making that call. I think their bigger point here, Mike, is that if you're a Jets fan or if you're a member of that organization and you're at a critical juncture right now, you're going to be looking for a new head coach, you're probably going to have a top five pick, you're going to be looking for a franchise quarterback, do you want to put your trust in a guy who has no track record picking players, who has not done a good job in the 2 years that he's been the general manager? Do you want him, A, picking a head coach to direct this franchise moving forward, and B, do you want him drafting a quarterback to potentially be your franchise quarterback over the next 5 or 10 years? I just don't think that John Idzik has shown anyone an ability to believe in him, to trust him, And Mike, I know you guys have written about this, but there are fans out here that have paid for multiple billboards that are springing up across North Jersey saying to fire John Idzik. And you don't see that very often. A general manager 2 years into the job, really has not instilled any kind of hope or any kind of faith. I think the smart thing would be for Woody Johnson to really hit the reset button here, provide some hope for the fan base and the franchise, that if you start clean with a general manager with a scouting background, that maybe you have a chance moving forward here.
To the extent that Woody Johnson isn't inclined to pay people to not work, could you see a possibility where John Idzik would be reassigned, much like Terry Bradway was when Mike Tannenbaum became the GM? Idzik has another role. Idzik's involved in negotiating contracts or whatever, something other than the GM job. Do you think that's a possibility at all?
Well, you're right. There is a precedent there with Terry Bradway. I don't know how often you can do that in your organization, reassign general managers. And that really depends on if they decide to make a change at the GM position, if the new GM is okay with that. I don't think you can saddle a new GM with the former GM being your cap guy. I think that sets up for a very awkward dynamic. And again, I thought it was a little bit strange when Woody Johnson decided to keep Terry Bradway on, as a scouting guy, but he has decided to do that. I don't know if you can do that with the second general manager.
Do you have any concern that if Idzik stays, it'll be harder for you to do your job covering the team because you're on the brink of an all-out war with the franchise by going after Idzik like this?
Well, look, I've been critical, Mike, of Idzik for a while. I don't concern myself with that. I concern myself with reporting what's factual, what's true. And, organizations have their own spin. They have their own in-house media outlets to provide any kind of, team spin that they want. Then that's their prerogative. I'm a reporter. I'm not employed by the organization. It's my job to find out what's going on in the organization. When things are going well and the team is playing well, I'm going to report that the team is playing well and that the GM is making good decisions and that the quarterback is, playing at a high level. But when the team isn't playing well, I'm not going to act as if everything is okay. That's not my job.
Regardless of who the coach or the GM are next year, do you believe that Geno Smith will be back with the team?
Well, look, he's under his rookie contract. There isn't a big financial stake in keeping him around. I think that he's clearly not the franchise quarterback. There's enough of a sample size here. You've got 24 starts under your belt, and you've got a player who's committed multiple turnovers in exactly half of those starts, 12 of them. He's only had 5 games in which he didn't commit a turnover. But every meaningful statistical measure for quarterbacks, he's one of the worst quarterbacks in the last year and a half in this league. He's had decision-making problems when he's been under duress. He missed a meeting the night before a game. He cursed out a fan after a frustrating performance. All of those elements, I think, come into play when you look at whether you think Geno Smith is a potential starting quarterback in this league. And I think by, again, every objective measure, statistically, intangible, decision-making, the answer to that, if you're being honest with yourself, is clearly no.
Any gut feeling on who the coach will be next year?
I mean, again, I think that depends on who the general manager is, because if you're bringing in a new general manager, then who knows? John Idzik is pretty thorough, so if he sticks around, he's pretty deliberate. So if he does indeed stick around, I'm sure he'll go through some of the viable names. And, I've always said that I think at this point the team needs to hire an offensive-minded head coach so that he can nurture and develop whatever quarterback they bring in next year. I think that's the smartest move.
I know you don't cover the Giants, but let's assume the Giants' job is available as well. Which one would you say is more desirable?
The Giants or the Jets? I mean, Mike, come on. It's clearly the Giants. They've got a stable ownership, one of the most respected ownerships, not only in the NFL, but in pro sports. So, I think that's a layup. The answer to that question is the Giants.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out. Manish, thanks for some of your time. Watch out for the yellow snow, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, there he is, Manish Mehta. He actually pulled over in the snow so he could talk to us, and we always appreciate his contributions. Interesting stuff about Rex Ryan and John Idzik, and I have a feeling there may be a follow-up at some point, either an on-the-record or off-the-record comment from someone with the Jets about what really did go down in that attempt to talk to Rex Ryan about Buddy Ryan. And as usual, there's probably going to be two versions of what really happened. When we come back, two versions of the picks for Week 13. But MDS and I disagree only on one. We had a push last week, so I'm still three games ahead. And since we only disagree on one, I'll at least be two games ahead next week. We'll see how we came down on the one game we disagree on. We'll talk about a couple of other games as well. We'll do that with MDS when we return. This is PFT Live. Time for this week's PFT Picks presented by, powered by, Subway, where winners eat. Last week, 11-4. Not too shabby for either of us. We disagreed on four. We split those two. I had the Bengals and the Browns. MDS had the Bears over the Bucks and the Seahawks over the Cardinals. Pretty good season-to-date averages. We had a rough start, but we're doing better, and I continue to hold a three-game lead, and MDS is back. Neither of us can gloat over last week because we did have a push. We've got one game on which we disagree this week. MDS, how did you feel? How were you feeling during the early games? We disagreed on three, and it looked like at one point I was going to hit on all three of them.
Yes, I was not feeling too good, I have to admit. I was actually sitting there with my wife watching the games, and at one point I turned to her and said, you know, every single game that I kind of have a rooting interest in, I'm losing, because of course I have a rooting interest in the three that we disagreed on, and I was losing all three of those. And then sometimes I just kind of take an interest in one team over another, want one team to win. And I kind of, all the teams I wanted to win were losing at one point in the early game. So I wasn't feeling that good about myself at that point. The Bears were the team that came back and won to give me that disagreement. And then the Seahawks won to give me that disagreement to manage a tie for the week. But no, I wasn't feeling all that good early on Sunday, I have to admit.
Yeah, you know, I was feeling pretty good about the Cardinals in that late game, and but for that drop by Jerron Brown, and, you know, I thought they told you in Pee Wee football, don't leave your feet when you don't have to when trying to catch a pass. If they had scored a touchdown there after the Seahawks had been getting field goals, you feel like maybe the game would be a little bit different, but it wasn't. You were right on that one. I was wrong. I really felt like the Cardinals were going to win it. I'm not ready to give up on the Cardinals, but the Cardinals are not one of the teams we're going to be talking about. We will be talking about the Seahawks. Seahawks go to Santa Clara to take on the 49ers Thursday night on NBC. We agree on that one. Tell me why you like the road team.
Well, I like the road team because I think the Seahawks are finally kind of getting it together and playing like the team that we all expected them to be, really all offseason and through week one when they were so impressive against the Packers. I think we kind of all thought, well, the Seahawks are the team to beat in the NFL this year. Then they went through a long stretch in which they really just were not looking like that at all. Even the games they were winning, they weren't always looking all that impressive. Now I think they are finally starting to play the kind of football that most of us were expecting from them throughout the season. I think this game is fascinating because the Seahawks and the 49ers probably won't make the playoffs. They probably both won't make the playoffs, I should say. One of them will probably be out just because they're right there in the wild card race right now. They still have to play each other twice. I think one of them will knock off the other one, and I think it's going to be the Seahawks knocking off the 49ers.
Yeah, the last time they played, it was an elimination game in the postseason. Now it feels like an elimination game, especially if the Seahawks break serve in Santa Clara, beat the 49ers there, with the 49ers having to go to Seattle. And you've got those five spots in the NFC that will go to the team that doesn't win or the teams that don't win the NFC South, seven teams jockeying for those five spots. And it very well could be that both the Seahawks and the 49ers will be on the outside looking in, although as of right now, the Seahawks would be the number six seed. I do like the Seahawks to win that game. The 49ers have felt in recent weeks like they're just doing enough to win. I was impressed by what the Seahawks were able to do against the Cardinals, and I feel like on a short week, compressed time frame, we're going to see the Seahawks get it together and go down there and emerge with a win that they desperately need if they want to have any chance to get back to the postseason. Okay, let's fast forward to Sunday. Game of the day, really the game of the week, Patriots at Packers. I went back and forth on this one all week long. I finally got whatever the word is I'm looking for, focus. I got clarity. Clarity! Ding! Clarity. I got clarity this morning, although I could be wrong. We both like the road team. Why do you like the Patriots?
This is a tough one. It is absolutely the best game of the day and one of the best games of the season. the Packers are playing so well, especially at home. And yet the Patriots, they are just a well-oiled machine right now. You know, I watched that Patriots-Lions game very closely. And on both sides of the ball and special teams, the Patriots, they are just doing everything right. Whereas the Packers, I look at it and I see maybe some areas where the Patriots' offense can exploit the Packers' defense. I see fewer areas where the Packers' offense can exploit the Packers' defense. I think it's a very close game. It's a very good game. I know the Packers are actually favored at home. I like the Patriots to go to Green Bay and win this one in what I think is going to be a really exciting, really well-played, maybe high-scoring, but certainly well-played, even if it's a low-scoring, more of a defensive struggle. These are just two very good football teams. Maybe a Super Bowl preview. I like the Patriots to do it.
Yeah, and all week long I kept saying, you got to give the home team the edge. You got to give the home team the edge. Well, why do we have to give the home team the edge? Why do we just assume that at Lambeau Field that it's some impenetrable fortress where a visiting team can't win? Yeah, Green Bay has scored more than 50 points each of the last two games there, but they weren't playing the Patriots. And I see week in and week out what Bill Belichick, the coach of the Patriots, does to construct a game plan specifically aimed at outscoring the opponent that week. Forget about next week. Forget about last week. Forget about anything else you've ever done. What is it going to take to win this Sunday? And what it's going to take is ball control, control the clock, keep Aaron Rodgers on the sideline, make him frustrated when he's in the game, keep him from having those quick strikes, cover Jordy Nelson. There's a novel concept. That's something the Vikings did better than most teams do this past weekend. And just slow that attack down, give them limited opportunities to score points, and then just try to outscore them. The Patriots have the offense to do it. And the Packers don't have the defense to shut down whatever the Patriots do. I could see the Packers try to take away what the Patriots do best, whether it's take away the pass. Fine, we'll run the ball 50 times. Belichick is willing to do it. The players buy in. That's why I think no matter what happens, no matter how we get there, and it should be a great game, whatever the end result, Patriots, I can't convince myself, will lose that game. Patriots win that game, and then at that point, the Super Bowl is theirs to lose.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely right. In fact, I would really say the winner of this game becomes the favorite to win the Super Bowl. This game may be a Super Bowl preview, but either way, I really do think the winner of this game is the favorite. The Patriots, especially, because then the Patriots would be the overwhelming favorites to earn home field advantage throughout the playoffs. The Packers still are by no means assured of getting home field in the playoffs, which makes that a little bit tougher, but absolutely. I think the Patriots are going to win, and I think after they do, you have to say they are the overwhelming favorites for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady to get their fourth rings.
The nightcap for Sunday, still a very good game. Not quite Patriots-Packers, but close to it. Broncos at Chiefs. Broncos won round one back in week two. The Chiefs have been very good since then, but for last Thursday night's debacle in Oakland. The Broncos have not looked great in recent weeks. The only game we disagree on for week 13. I'll give you the first word. Denver at Kansas City. Who do you like?
Well, the Broncos have looked ripe for the taking the last few weeks. Andy Reid has a phenomenal track record of preparing for the following game when he gets a longer work week, be it a bye week or coming off a Thursday game. In this case, it's a Thursday game. And yet, the way the Broncos came through in the fourth quarter against the Dolphins, combined with the way the Chiefs failed to come through in the fourth quarter against the Raiders, just has me feeling like the Broncos are a team I can trust more than the Chiefs. So I like the Broncos to complete the season sweep of the Chiefs here, and that really puts them in control of the AFC West.
Yeah, I like the Chiefs, though, to bounce back at home. It's a huge game. It's prime time. That sea of red is even more raucous when you're talking about a prime time game. The Chiefs, a little extra time to get ready, a little extra motivation to take that Raiders game and put it behind them. And we can't discount the impact of Eric Berry's illness on this Chiefs team. They have been through a lot of adversity over the last couple of years, and they have responded well when they have faced adversity. And I see them rallying around Eric Berry, rallying around the locker room, and finding a way to, again, all it comes down to is scoring one more point than the opposition. And I believe that the Chiefs can and will pull it off Sunday night in primetime and then make for a great race in the final four games for the Broncos-Chiefs for that division crown.
It's going to be a fascinating game because the Broncos can all but take over the AFC West. I mean, they can't clinch it still for a few weeks, but a season sweep of the Chiefs combined with looking ahead to the rest of their schedule, you'd really have to say the Broncos are all but assured of winning the division again if they win this game. So the Chiefs really do need to win this game if they want any hope of getting to play a home playoff game. If they lose, they're still in the wild card race, but I really think this is the game where the Broncos establish themselves as kind of the second-place team in the AFC behind the Patriots.
Well, no games that we'll be having any added interest in until Sunday night because we agree on them all, except that game, Broncos-Chiefs. Should be a good one. Happy Thanksgiving, MDS. We'll do it again next Thursday.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
And those were this week's PFT Picks, powered by Subway, where winners eat. Beating a lot of Subway this weekend, working around the turkey. And we'll see next week if one of us can prevail, because one of us, barring a tie, is going to be right and one's going to be wrong on that Sunday night game between the Broncos and the Chiefs. That's it for today's edition of PFT Live. We won't be back until Monday. I know you're upset. We'll be back on Monday. I'll be in Connecticut. We will have PFT on NBCSN tonight, just a half hour, 5:30 to 6 p.m. tonight, and then Friday night, a full hour getting you ready for Week 13, and that's when I pay off my what would you do if the Raiders beat the Chiefs. The pieces of my Andy Reid costume are trickling in. Hopefully, they'll all be here by Friday. Otherwise, I'm going to have to do some serious improvisation. We'll see how that all plays out. Check us out around the clock at ProFootballTalk.com because all weekend, all Thanksgiving, have your cell phone device, have your laptop, have whatever available, and be ready to follow us at PFT. We'll be reacting to the things happening during the game, any news, any developments, injuries, etc., getting ready for Sunday, looking at Thursday. There's always big storylines that come out of Thursday. We'll have it all covered at ProFootballTalk.com. Have a great Thanksgiving. We're very thankful for you, and we look forward to continuing this on Monday.